welcome to, I was going to say Matt Broke Weekly then, it's not that at all.
Gotcha.
This is much better than that old load of old rubbish. This is Bagel Tech Mac, isn't it?
Three, two, one, go.
Hello, this is Bagel Tech Mac and my name is Ewan Runkin. I shouldn't do impressions, should I? I'm not very good at that. Right, joining us today, in no particular order, from left to right, Mr. Alex G. Fox. How are you, Alex?
I'm very good. Obviously, my screen order is very different to yours because I'm at the bottom left at the moment. But yes, I'm very well. I'm glad to hear you're doing well as well, Will.
I am doing well. And I'm pleased to, I'm pleased that you're pleased that I'm doing well.
This is going to go on for a while.
Hello and welcome to Bagel Tech Mac. I began the last version of this saying, what's it called? What's the Leo one called?
Mac Break Weekly, you
Mac
said.
Mac Break Weekly, that's right. But this isn't... no, I'm not... Right, I'll start again. Three, two, one. Hello and welcome to Bagel Tech Mac.
Weekly.
Bagel Tech Mac Weekly comes out every single week. On the show today, well, my name is Will Green. Yes, what's his name? Ewan. Ewan is on holiday. Where is he? What's he doing?
He's at Port Merion right at the moment.
Is he really? Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, he's a prisoner.
I've got a prisoner jacket, you know.
Have you?
Oh, yeah. I bought it when I was in Port Merion myself. The voice, introducing from left to right, Mr. Alex G. Fox. How are you, Alex?
Very well. I'm delighted to hear you. Shall I ask you how you are again?
Yeah, I'm not too bad.
And the new family?
Yeah, they're all good, yeah.
That's what we want to hear. That's the important stuff out of the way.
Yep, everybody's happy and healthy.
Excellent.
So that's the main thing. Moving on from left to right, Mr. Dr. Happy Mac. Andrew, how's things?
It's good. I'm in a new shed, office, a new place to work and be. Excellent. Yes, bit of a manic day today, but just taking an hour or so out to do this.
This
podcast.
It looks really good. Your new office, fantastic.
No, it's fantastic. We've got lights and everything going on. It's brilliant. Got the internet in. It's a home from home. I was out here last night. I believe we meant to call it pottering.
Pottering. Oh, I've always wanted a shed. Have you got a garden shed?
This is it. This is the garden shed.
That is the garden shed.
Yes, it's at the bottom of the garden.
Garden shed with a bit of homebrew going on there. You know, that sort of thing. It's the get away from
10 meter long garden shed.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Mr. Don McAllister.
Hello.
How are you doing, Don?
I'm doing all right. Thank you very much.
In my mind, I was going to sort of prep this and say, what do you think of it so far? And I was hoping you'd say not a lot. So can we do this?
But I would have said rubbish. that's not the catchphrase, is it?
Yeah, but no, okay. Don, what do you think of it so far?
Rubbish! No, I'm not saying not a lot. No way.
Why not? Yeah. Go on, just for me. Don, what do you think of it so far?
No, I refuse. Oh. I'm not getting saddled with another person's flipping catchphrase. When I don't even sound like him anyway. But anyway.
Go on. Well, maybe you should invite a catchphrase of your own.
I'll think of some.
Okay.
All right. Or you will think of some more for me, one of the two.
And finally, Mr. Chris Forsman. How are you, Chris?
Pretty good. It's freezing here in Chicago, but I'm managing to hang in there.
I get confused in America and Australia because I sometimes think that you're like, this is the beginning of your summer, but it's not, is it? We're all the same, aren't we, season-wise?
No, we're about to start winter here pretty soon. It's full-on fall. Rainy, cold, windy.
Sounds hot. Because Chicago's quite far north, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's getting on towards Canada. This is a bit of a... I hope I don't baffle people with my sort of superb knowledge of geography, but... right, now, I've cobbled together a few news stories, you'd be pleased to know. And we'll kick off with... Well, I suppose the big one, the big thing of the week, or the big story of the week, is the
biography, Steve Jobs' official biography, has come out. And Dan pointed out, quite rightly, that we shouldn't give too much away because it is a great read. I'm about a third of the way through myself. And there's some really sort of interesting stuff I'd never sort of come across before in the various newspapers and blogs and so forth. Anybody else read it? Or?
Yeah, I'm a couple of chapters into it, but to be honest, I don't know when not just to skip the early days. I'm probably more interested in, you know, sort of like the later period of his life. And it's, I don't know, I'm finding it's a bit heavy going in the early part, but I'll persevere. But it's good. No, it's a very informative read. I've not really found much new stuff as of yet that I hadn't heard of before.
Don, tell the truth. Have you skipped right to the end for the last few pages just to read it?
No. I've actually got two versions. I had three versions to begin with. I pre-ordered the Kindle version. And then when it came out, the Kindle version didn't come out at midnight when we were all expecting it. So I actually cancelled that because the iBooks version came out and was downloadable. So I cancelled the Kindle version. And then I got the iBooks version that downloaded straight away, and then I thought, well, just as a bit of a keepsake, I'll get the proper book as well because it's nice to have with all the proper photos in and everything. So I ended up with two versions, not three, because I did manage to cancel the Kindle version in time.
That's the key thing. The photo. I mean, I've got the Audible version of it because I doing a lot of commuting at the moment, so I went for Audible. But I do miss the photos.
Mm. Well, that's 26 hours or something, isn't it?
I think 30 plus, I think.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Who's narrating it?
I don't know. I don't know who he is.
Bill Gates.
he's not too bad. It's okay. It's not irritating. Isn't it awful when you listen to an audiobook and the plot or the story or the narrative is ruined because of the chap narrating it. Anybody else read it?
I've just cracked into the first, I think, chapter. I'm not even sure if I'm made it beyond the first chapter yet, although, you know, I was just reading the introduction and you know, the author put in a whole list of, like, a cast of characters, sort of, so it sort of gives a little bit of backstory a lot of the people are going to talk about. And I'm basically just a history nerd, and I really love the history of science and technology, and I love the stories behind everything, so I'm completely engrossed in it, although I just haven't had a lot of time to really power through anything yet. I'm just, like I said, still in the first chapter, but I did wait and ordered. I didn't get an iBook or a Kindle version. I just waited for the real book to show up on my doorstep, and I got that on Tuesday, so.
It's... I should buy the thing. I hate to give anything away, but he dies in the end. Is that?
Spoiler alert.
Sorry.
Oh dear, I bet you were fun to go and watch Titanic with. I wonder if they're going to make a biopic at the end of this.
Yeah, I think. So well, I think they're already in discussions, aren't they? Yeah.
Because his very early days, which, you know, it isn't a spoiler. You know, he's I only recently found out that he was adopted, and he only recently. You know, his sister only recently found out that her brother was Steve Jobs, which, you know, must have been quite a shock. I think there was an awful lot of his very early days of life. You sort of, you know, it doesn't matter that it's a famous person. It's quite interesting just that sort of part of, you know, people having to live that way and not really knowing who they are. And possibly that drives you on to be something even better than you would have been if you had the... you know, the space to just feel, if you like, in quotes, normal. So maybe that was part of what egged him on a little bit, to prove himself a bit. Mm. But, you know, a very interesting man, just, you know, without happening to build the biggest company on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's very hard not to spoil too much. So, well, a good pick.
I was going to ask Dr. Happy Mac his thoughts, but I just see an empty chair. That's all I can see. He's either very, very short, or he's left the room for some reason. Okay, so that's the biography. I mean, if you're an Apple fan, and I'm sure you are listening to this, it's a must buy, isn't it? Really, and I'm about a third through it, and it's very interesting. The key thing, One thing that surprises me is he cries all the time. He cries hell of a lot during a lot of the meetings and stuff, and I don't know what that's all about, but if he doesn't get his way, he seems to burst into tears. It's which is sort of, I wonder, like, on the one side of it, you see him as like this hard-nosed business bloke, and the other side, this very emotional, sensitive man who obviously one of his key driving things in life is the aesthetics of a product, you know, sort of the look as well as the functionality, but the look seems to be more important than anything. And his dad was I don't want to say a mechanic, but he was sort of restored cars and so forth. And the big sort of ethos that he installed in Jobs was that it doesn't matter if you can't see what's inside the car, you know, the engine part, people don't see that, but that's got to be as beautiful as what's what people can see. And so that's something that he took from his dad and brought it into Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, tears, I mean, there's two sides of it, isn't it? Tears is, it can be as much frustration as anything else. And, you know, if it's that, if everything being perfect was that important to the man, and let's face it, it must have been to have achieved what he did achieve, then I imagine the tears were tears of frustration because of, you know, the only other thing you can do is go ballistic. And, you know, I think he did that occasionally, but, you know, tears are the other side of the same equation.
Mm.
A very interesting fella.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of people out there going to their offices tomorrow saying, I want to build a big company, I'm just going to cry at the drop of a hat and see what happens, and they'll miss the point completely.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how he, you know, the money aspect of it. I mean, he was worth bazillions of dollars, you know, at an early age as well. But it was never the money really that motivated him. I think he just wanted to make good products, and you know, the money came along as a secondary thing. Of course, he needed the money to do what he wanted to do. But I just find it fascinating that you know, such a rich person, and he lived, you know, in a fairly modest house compared to what he could have had with the cash that he had in the bank, and, you know, lived a quiet, private, pretty much, you know, sort of secluded family life, really, and did take care of his family and was really interested with his family. Not really what you come to expect from someone with that sort of wealth at their disposal. That you know, he did live a very quiet life, and you know, his main interest really was just creating brilliant products that you could use and use easily and have a really good experience with.
Do you ever see that interview with Bill Gates about they asked him what his opinion of the iPad was, and he refused to comment?
No, I don't think I did, actually.
Yeah. They said, what do you think? He said, I'm just not going to talk about it. I'm sorry, no comment. I thought, you miserable sod.
Yeah, but he, in that position, he cannot be right.
Yeah,
if he likes it and he says he likes it, he's going to be destroyed from Microsoft. And if he hates it, or doesn't hate it but says he hates it, he's going to be destroyed by everyone else. It's a no-win situation for the fella. Mm-hmm.
But they haven't got anything, have they?
Oh,
Microsoft? They haven't got an iPad equivalent, have they?
No, but it's like, you know, he's praising the enemy.
Well, they were the first with the tablets, though, weren't they? I mean, they've had tablets out for 10 years. They just never,
crap, though,
they never got it right.
I think you'll find that was Moses.
Oh. Did you ever try one, Don? Have you ever tried a Windows tablet?
Yes, I actually bought an old Fujitsu touchpad thing from years ago. It's about 2 inches thick and weighs about 10 pounds. And you had to use a stylus and use the, you know, the old version. I think it was pre-Windows XP, I think. And I love the concept, but, you know, it wasn't fully baked. You know, there was no applications for it, and it was but, you know, even then, it was you could see if they did it right, it would be a great idea. And of course they didn't follow it through, really.
But the iPad came first, didn't it?
Of what?
In Apple land. I mean, isn't that the rumor
when they developed
and
the
then, Yeah, and Steve Jobs just looked at it and went, you know what? We need to add a phone to this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, I see. So you can go back before that, though, can't you? I mean, it was
the Newton.
Yeah, it was Newton, but it was even before that. Someone like, I remember my brother bought one for an exorbitant amount of money, and it was more or less just for keeping your names and numbers in. And I think you could do some very, very basic things with it. And it was stylus operated.
Scion, mate, that's what you want.
Yeah.
I've still got my Scion right next to me. Only because I haven't put it away yet. But, you know, there was quite a few of them around. But, you know, what they did, they made it bigger and better. I mean, what interests me is I wonder how long it takes for retro styling to come into these things. I wonder how long it will take for Don's Fujitsu brick to become fashionable. Because if we're all sick and tired of these razor-sharp, tiny, really thin, super-fast things, we're going to want a brick again to show
that
it's
really heavy. No, you wouldn't want this. It's really, really heavy.
When I first joined Apple, I took my Newton 2000 along, and I thought, oh, this will be a statement. Look, I'm making a statement here. Pile of old rubbish, you know. So anyway, yeah, okay, well, that's that. We're done with that. Moving on to the... So connecting these two stories together... Apple tribute video. I haven't seen it, but Don, I know you've seen it.
Yeah, it was published a couple of days ago. It's really good. It's not. I don't think you can download it. You have to watch it streaming from the Apple website. And when it first came out, there was a few problems, you know, trying to get on because there were limited capacity. But if you can get on and have a look, it's about an hour and 20 minutes long, something like that. And it's it's Tim Cook and Johnny Ive. Johnny Ive does a particularly really good segment, a very sort of personal, very powerful. Tells some very interesting, and it's sort of tinged with humour as well as being sad. You know, there's some he has some reminiscences about Steve and when they used to travel around together and stuff. And there's a couple of musical performances, co-player on there, and also a lady whose name escapes me, and a couple of other people. Nora Jones, isn't it? Yeah, cheers, Chris. Yeah. So no, it's well worth a watch. Yeah, definitely well worth a watch. Very nicely done.
So old Tim Boring Cook didn't light up the screen, did he?
No, he starts it up. Well, he's like the you know, he's sort of the MC, started it and finished it.
And Fatty Schiller? Does he make it?
No, Phil Schiller wasn't there. No. But had
any more Apple employees, we can insult us, right?
Well, we were talking before we started recording the show. there's one last one, the used car salesman. What's his name?
No one wants to say it.
Oh, I can't remember his name. What's his name?
Used car salesman.
Scott Forstall?
Ah! He's not you. Go away.
Sorry, Ewan, but your network's finished.
It was very interesting, though, because it was definitely aimed at the company, and it was sort of, I thought, very, very nicely done, but it was definitely a way to sort of draw a line, you know, under the events that had happened, and to move forward and try and put some closure on, you know, what, you know, would Steve passing, etc. So I thought it was a really nice touch, but I could see why they wanted to do it. You know, they had to make a statement, and they had to sort of, you know, I think it sort of gave closure to a lot of people who actually worked for Apple and allowed them to move forward from that point on. So it was very nicely done. Well worth a watch. I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think Apple have handled the whole situation really nicely. They've not, you know, been overly sycophantic, and they've not been overly sort of sentimental, but they've paid the right amount of respect to the man for what he achieved. And they're saying that, you know, we're still a company, we've still got shareholders mm-hmm. to keep happy, and we've still got, you know, half of the Western world to keep happy with what we're going to supply. And I, you know, I think they've done handled the whole thing really nicely. I'd like to think that it was Steve Jobs' final organisation that he said, right, this is what I want you to do in the event of my passing. I like to think that this sort of nicely Apple-like way of doing things was his final gift, if you like, because it has been handled really nicely.
Chris, you were about to... Was that Jordan or...
I watched it the other day, and it got me feeling bad all over again. I was talking about the other day, right when I got the press release, you know, we kind of put a little kind of tribute thing together on ours, and you know, I was like furiously typing that up, and it was like right before bed, and I went to bed and got up the next day, and it just felt like really uneasy and anxious and sad, like the whole day, and I honestly like just couldn't. I was pretty, and it was strange, and I remember someone talking about how when they were young, they remember Jerry Garcia died, and their mom was just like really upset.
That's a nice, you know, thing.
What's that?
Jerry Garcia.
Not Cherry. Jerry Garcia, oh, the sorry. Person. You know, but they, you know, like that. he was such an important figure and a symbol for them that even though they didn't necessarily know him personally and only knew him through his music or whatever, like, they were really upset when he died. It was really sad for them. And I think the same thing for me, like, Steve Jobs just sort of almost personified, like, the things that I admire and look up to in the technology world. You know, he was that figure for me in a lot of ways. And so I was just, it just really, like, affected me much more than I expected. And when I saw that video and just, you know, especially when Jonathan and I was talking about him, you know, and people were coming up and just it almost seemed like they could barely hold back their tears. And it just made me feel like just a bad all over again. Like, it just, the whole thing was just so touching that it just really affected me.
Did you cry, Chris? Go on, tell the truth.
I did.
When I heard, I cried. I've never cried about anybody that I didn't know. That's the only person I've ever cried about.
I was thinking about that during the week, because every time that you see on the internet, you go somewhere and they have that, what is now, I guess, the ubiquitous photograph that was on the Apple homepage of Steve and the glasses and the stare. I was thinking, why are people still sort of, where do you get that? Oh my God, it's happened, you know, and that effect. And it's weird, you know, if like anyone else, you know, the CEO of Dell or HP or whatever died, you know, you would, people that had their products would pay no attention. But I guess it's because you're looking at my MacBook Pro and my MacBook and my screen and stuff like that. It's that if you use an Apple product, you actually almost in a tangible way have a bit of Steve Jobs with you. You know, his input into this stuff was so great, and it's so much about him and his personality. And he, you know, not just the good stuff, you know, the design sensibilities and how it works and stuff, but the stuff that you know, that every Apple product seems to have, that little bit that's really annoying, which is just his way of doing it. So even though you didn't know him, and you, everyone thinks, oh, actually I do know that guy because I've got this thing of his in my life, and it's kind of absolutely part of my life, and then, and there's so much of him in that technology. That's what I think anyway. So you do, I mean, I think people do feel that they almost know him.
Right, that's that then.
Cool.
New MacBooks and MacBook Pros. Well, I began this story by looking at some rumours from, oh, I can't remember, Apple Insider, I think. But the rumours have come to fruition, I understand.
Yeah, we've had some speed bumps.
A little speed bump. No big whoop.
Which irritates Alex. Alex doesn't like speed bumps, do you, Alex?
No. Terrible thing.
What have they done to him there? What's the score? Should we have all... I can hear people tapping away, and I'm doing the same to have a quick look.
It was a very, very minor thing, I think, because there was no big fanfare. They just... brought some new updates out for the Mac. I think it was just the MacBook Pros with some changes in speed to the processors that they've used. So very, very sort of minor upgrades, but worth having if you're getting a new MacBook.
It's always upsetting though, isn't it? Mine was the latest, but it is no longer the latest. It's like that first scratch on your brand new car or something, isn't it? Mine is no longer the latest and the best. It is mediocrity. It's vintage. So right, okay. 15-inch starts from $1,549. Where's the buy one now then? Buy now. Go on. You tell me how old-fashioned my Mac. 15-inch, 2.4 gigahertz. 2.4, and mine is 2.2.
Oh, yeah. It's only a couple of minor gigahertz improvement. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine.
Yeah,
but the graphics card and everything else is the same.
It depends on what model. I think across the range they've bumped it from like a 2.3 gigahertz to 2.4 gigahertz, and then from 2.7 to 2.8. I think the other thing as well is the hard drive options have gone up slightly. So moving from 320 gig in the low configuration to 500 gig and 750 gig in the 30.
I've never quite understood Apple's. There's plenty of 1 gigabyte, 1 terabyte hard drives for laptops, you know, and the fact that they they seem to do that. They never seem to, you know, most people would sort of go 500, well, we'd go from 500 to a terabyte, but they don't seem to do that. Mm. I looked at that, and it just looked like an odd number, but, you know, maybe that's just me and my OCD. But it seemed like an odd number.
So you can say me and my shadow.
No, my shadow doesn't care about much.
Sorry, Chris, I interrupted.
No, I was just saying it's Alex. It's him.
Yeah, it's just me.
Right, that's that. Nothing more.
You could ask Andrew, but you'd have to shout, I think.
Yeah, where's he gone? He's buggered off again, hasn't he? Off he goes. Oh, well. Right, yes. Going back to the book again. I should have done this. This should be back one. But something that's been widely reported is Steve Jobs' passion to destroy the Android with his last breath. He clearly sees this as a I think almost a, not an honor thing, but they've stolen intellectual property from Apple.
No, I think he thinks it's a personal affront. I think he looks at it as dishonorable, you know, like a slap in the face almost.
Do you think so? Is that what? Because
absolutely.
Apple and Google have been very close for a long time, haven't they? But now things are certainly changing, aren't they?
Well, I mean, you could tell it was changing even while Eric Schmidt was, you know, still kind of hanging on to the board. But even while Google had announced Android, I mean, things were already getting tense then. And, you know, and again, I don't think it's not like Steve Jobs hates Google. I think he's just really upset about the fact that they basically were going to do their own thing as far as smartphones were concerned. Apple came out with their thing, and then there's like, oh, wait a minute, we just should just copy this. And I think that's really how he sees it. I mean, that's obvious. He said that's how he sees it. You know, the Android team ripped us off. And it sucks, and we're going to stick it to them.
Well, Google are making no friends, are they? I mean, on the one side, they're sort of trying to not paraphrase Steve, but ripping off Apple in one sense as far as the operating system for their phone is concerned. And then in the other sense is they're annoying Microsoft with their sort of giving away, you know, free productivity suite in the cloud. It's they're annoying everybody at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, but in Google's defense, where Microsoft and concerned. I mean, stealing an idea, or I don't know, stealing an idea is far too strong a way of putting it. You know, coming up with their own version of something similar is one thing, but, you know, there is nothing they can do other than search if they're not allowed to tread on anyone else's toes. I mean, Apple and Microsoft are so well established in what they do. If anyone wants to get anywhere near their marketplace at all, they're going to tread on people's toes. And I think Google are still counting on the fact that the majority of people see them as a company that they don't feel they're ever paying Google anything. I mean, people still can't quite work out how Google can be worth so much money when they don't, as people see, do anything. They don't sell anything. They don't make anything. They just sort of give stuff away. How do you become that wealthy giving stuff away? And I think they're still trading on the back of that.
Yeah.
What Apple and Microsoft need to do is do a little bit of shouting, and then they may just be able to change people's opinions of Google. I mean, there are people out there that really got it in for Google, and it's a new thing. I mean, it used to be everyone hated Microsoft, then everyone started to hate Apple because they became successful. And there's a section of people out there that really got it in for Google. I mean, the only thing left is Linux, and then we'll have the full set.
No one's going to bother hating Linux. No one's. But no, I think what the issue is that people are starting to realize what Google's business model is. And that's they entice you with this free stuff to get you to give up information about yourself. They collect that information and sell it. That is what Google does, is collect information about everyone on the internet and sell it.
I would agree to a certain extent, but I think they're slightly changing now. If you think of the sort of Google apps, and I've moved my business across to it now, so instead of having my email with GoDaddy or whoever else, my email now is looked after by Google. It costs me $5 a month, and it's $5 per user
per month, and they do a really good job.
Of course, if you look at the terms and conditions, it's not your email. It's their email.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they own it. You upload your email to Google, they own it.
Oh.
Yeah. They allow you to look at it, but it belongs to them.
Yeah, another example is something that I fell foul of yesterday. I wanted to make another Google Plus account just for various silly reasons to try and host a show, which I gave up with. But I could not get past the verification system, which is a new system to me, which they insisted that I put in my mobile phone number so they could text me a code to verify. And I tried everything. I tried printing off the codes. I tried using the iPhone, and there's an app to get around it. And this, in the end, I just gave up and I just put my number in. And as I did it, I thought, you know what? I'm now going to get bombarded with rubbish from now to the day I die, because of every company in the world is now going to have my mobile telephone number. But, you know, there probably is. If somebody could talk me through it, there was probably a really convoluted way of getting around not giving them my phone number. But I was losing the will to live at that point, so I just decided to do it.
Right.
But I'm not joking. It was about 15 minutes of trying to get around it, and I couldn't. And someone say all you needed to do is find that hidden part of the screen, and if you press 17 buttons, something else will pop up, and you'll be able to press next without putting in your number. But I couldn't find it. So they've now got my mobile telephone number.
See, the most interesting thing about Google, and I don't know who it was that said it, but someone described them not as so much as a search company, but as an advertising company. You know, that's what they are. Basically, mm-hmm. they're a big ad agency
right.
that use technology to connect advertisers with potential customers. So, you mm-hmm. know, all their services really are predicated on the fact that they have, you know, that they want to sell your information, they want to put adverts in front of you. And even Android is part of that as well. Of course, search is the primary one, because if you go searching for stuff, they will feed you ads based on what your search terms are, and they're very clever about that. But the whole idea behind Android was actually, you know, going after the people who were in the mobile space so that they could sell and the Android operating system to people so they could serve mobile ads to them. And, you know, and Google Chrome and Chromebooks, you know, you get free browser, but, you know, you're hooked into Google and they can serve you ads. And I think the whole thing with Siri and Apple is very interesting in that respect, because they're trying to actually bypass Google's business model. They're trying to get around Google and really not so much deliver their own search engine, but engineer Siri to be something more than a search engine. And if they can do it, they could actually cut Google out of an awful lot of the business that they're sending, that they are currently sending their way now by you know, sort of funneling off into their own services. And I think that's going to be really interesting over the next 2 years, see how that actually pans out.
Yeah, I was reading something the other day, and I can't remember exactly where, but someone was talking about the fact that, you know, if you go, like, say you go, or you're at your computer and you want to look for a restaurant. So you just type in the restaurant name in Google and it'll pull up a lot of stuff, and you'll get like a Yelp review, and you'll get like maybe Google Places, and you'll maybe get some other things. You know, here in Chicago, they have like sites like Metro Mix and Red Eye in Chicago that, like, you know, report on local businesses. So, you know, you'd go through Google first, and then you would, you know, more than likely you might go to like, say, the Yelp reviews and look at the reviews and look at the, instead what Siri is doing is you're like, find me the nearest Chinese restaurant. It goes straight to Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
It skips Google. It goes straight to Yelp and pulls the data from. So it's not, you know, in some cases when it doesn't know what else to do with your question, you know, it'll just do a Google search and this is what you get. But yeah, in a lot of cases where people would normally do a search and then go, you know, they're just skipping that or bypassing it, going straight to some particular source.
And over time, that's going to get more, you know, as they bring more services into play. I mean, developers are crying out to get onto the Siri API so they can hook their services in with Siri. You know, over time, that's going to get more mm-hmm. and more. So they will actually, you know, divert a lot of the traffic that Google are getting away from Google.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that they can use their vast resources to do, isn't it? Mm-hmm. They can build their own internet. Because infrastructure is not as expensive as it was when it first started.
Because Amazon's doing a similar thing, aren't they, with the Fire, in that they're bypassing Google searches because they're using this, I can't remember what the technology is, but they're building their own, well, they've got their own backend, they've got the S3 stuff, but the technology they're using to serve up search results are filtered through their own systems, and they can intercept it and aggregate it and deliver whatever they want. So again, I think Amazon are also looking at alternatives to the standard traditional, you know, type your entry into a Google search query and get that back.
I mean, do you think that's the way it's going to go? We're going to sort of have a search system based on what we feel, almost like a political party. We want a search system based on what we feel is the most relevant for our choices in life. So, you know, you'll go with Amazon if you find that the Amazon results are the sort of results that you want, or you'll go with Apple, or you'll go with Google. So maybe things are split themselves off into slightly, you know, people will lose the persona of being completely impartial. Yeah. And we'll accept them for being partial, but then we'll go to the ones that we want to give us our answer.
Yeah, I think there's a danger in that when you're looking at sort of news and knowledge and information. Perhaps on the consumer side, it's not that big a deal, really. Because, I mean, we do that now. I mean, if I'm going to buy something, I'll go to Amazon because I've got Amazon Prime, and that's a big loyalty thing for me to drive me to Amazon to find decent prices, you know, because I'll get free delivery. So in some respect, that's happening now, and we probably will see more of that in the future. Just how much of it is controlled and how much is good is going to be up for debate, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, we do that anyway, don't we, by which newspaper we buy or which
RSS feeds we subscribe to.
So, you know, we do it to a certain extent, and we as individuals choose what colour we want our news, you know. Maybe we'll do the same with search. Mm-hmm. It would make sense because at the moment we like to kid ourselves that we're not being led to like lambs to the slaughter, but in reality we know we are.
Right. Okay. Is that one covered?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, what do you think of it so far?
It's been very good. I've been entertained. It's been illuminating.
You won't do it for me, will you?
I won't.
No. Oh, it was very well recognised that one came up, actually.
You were very subtle.
That one slipped in really, really subtly.
Okay, last story of the show before we move on to cool things is the Apple TV. Again, I hate to harken back to the book, but one of the big things in the book at the end is that Apple, I should say Steve, reckons he's got the TV finally cracked. Now, we've got a bet on for, is it $10? That the,
depends if you're going to win or lose.
With Kyle, it's $10 at the end of the year that they'll release one. I've said they won't. He says they will. Does anybody want to sort of join in this bet? Is there going to be an Apple TV?
You're trying to offload it, aren't you?
I think all bets are off now.
I think I'm safe money.
Do that.
Yeah, I think all bets
are off. You're hedging there, Will.
No. I'm confident with it. $10 that there will not be an Apple TV by the end of this year.
Sorry. Yeah, by the end of this year.
Oh, by the end of this year? No.
No, it's not happening.
Is there going to be an Apple TV, an actual physical TV, yes or no, panel?
You know what? Yes. I would always have said no, but then I've looked at what an Apple TV might actually be able to do differently, and I think, you know, I'd buy one of them. If that could sit nicely with my network all built in, so I can have all my streaming media and I can have all my films and I can have everything built into a really nice, easy-to-use interface. I mean, that's one of the troubles. You look at all the modern TVs that have got icons and various things and Skype and this, that and the other. They're horrific. I mean, they're like the old days of trying to record something via the teletext cursor. And, you know, if anyone can make it work and look nice and do what you want it to do without you needing to throw your remote control through the window, Apple can do it. I think I'd like one of those. I'm not sure I'd be allowed one, but I know I'd like one.
Chris, what do you think?
It sounds to me, I feel pretty confident that what Steve's saying is that there's going to be one. You know, it's definitely not coming by the end of the year. No. I've talked to some people at Apple, and they've told me that there's nothing new coming out the rest of the year. So I feel pretty confident saying that. You know, so could we see one next year? I think that's an increasingly likely possibility, yes.
Mm. Do you think I'll do a partnership with somebody rather than, or do you think it would be, like, you know, will it be, you know, like a lot of cars are sort of with sort of iPod connectivity? Oh, Christ, before I finish this thingy. Sure. Yes or no? Don, yes or no?
What?
Apple TV next year.
Next year? I don't know. I used to be completely on the fence, and I always think that they probably wouldn't do it, but it looks as though, you know, the likelihood is now that they will actually do a TV. The timing is, goodness knows, it really depends on so much things. I'm not sure how much of the timing is on the technology. I think the technology is probably fairly straightforward for them. The thing they'll be trying to get sort of all the ducks in a row are the content providers and the costs. You know, getting these component prices down to a level whereby, you know, they can make their usual 30 or 40% markup on them. So I think, yes, we'll definitely see one. Timing, I don't know. I really don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if we don't see it for another 12 months, to be honest.
Yeah, next Christmasy time.
Mm.
Dr. Happy Mac, two things, yes or no. Plus, the last story, you mentioned the iPad 3 and a new connector. So first off, Apple TV, yes or no, and then
no.
Don't sit on the fence. Say what you think.
In fact, I think they'll stop selling the old Apple TV.
No,
they're going to stop selling computers completely, aren't they?
No. Apple. I think the Apple TV is probably, it's one of those things. Maybe that nobody else in the company has a vision for it, and it'll just sit there for a while now, whilst they work out what on earth they're going to do with it.
Bloomberg says Jeff Robbins on it. The guy they bought SoundJMMP from, the developer SoundJMMP, they bought that and he came on and turned it into iTunes. And he's also been involved in development of the iPad or iPod and iTunes Music Store and everything. Bloomberg says that he's working on it.
Now, that's interesting, because then it could be a bit of an output device rather than just an input device. For instance, the tuner built into your television for whatever it is you're using could then output to all the rest of the Macs and everything else in your possession, and iPads and iPhones as a streaming device. So it could be a central hub.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say that I never knew the Apple TV. It's really good, you know, because I really used to slag it off. Did you know if you turn on something called home sharing in iTunes, you can watch it? I never knew this. Oh, now you found this about 2 weeks ago. I've been slagging this thing off now for a year. So what other rubbish is it? What's the point of this? Turn home sharing. I thought, oh, Christ, I can watch all me movies and stuff from my Mac.
Yeah, we've got the new setup here in the office. There's the server over there over my shoulder.
Yeah.
In the shed. And then down there, the window, through the window at the bottom there, there's, in fact, this is wasted on the audio stream, isn't it? So I'm going to stop moving the computer around.
What have you got a random lady in the back? Your stuff.
Yeah, so the Apple TV's in the house, the server's in the new shed, there's a network connection between the two. So you could just fire up the Apple TV and go, oh yeah, movie on the server, click, poff, watch it.
It's really good.
It's like a whole...
God. Go on.
It's like what it was actually made for.
I'm really chuffed.
The thing is, if they do make an Apple TV, you know, a proper TV, it won't be like a proper TV. It will be something different. It won't be like, you know, what we imagine now to be one of these horrible flat screen TVs from Samsung. It will be different. It'll still be a big honking piece of glass with a frame around it. But you know, the innards, how it works and what it displays and what it connects with is going to be completely different to what we've seen up to now.
You never know, it might have a computer in it.
Could well be.
Yeah, that would be novel.
Andrew, touching on that last thing, you hear that they're going to change the connector. Rubbish, I think. I think that's rubbish, but go on.
Yeah, no, it was just on. A rumour I saw before we started that the iPad 3, which is slated for next year, Easter time, you know, a year from when the iPad 2 was launched, is going to have a mini dock adapter on the bottom.
That's a point. How have Apple got away with not going USB compliant? Because everyone else thought that was an EU regulation.
No, the EU legislation is that the charger has, if you charge your phone through it, it has to be mini USB, so it can be compatible with any other charger. But the Apple dock is also a data connector, so it's exempt.
Okay, so they made up a... It's like that's banning cigarette advertising, isn't it?
Yes.
For everything but motor racing.
There's a provision that if that it they can make an adapter that makes it, and that's what Apple did.
See?
There you go.
Right, okay, well, that sort of wraps up the news. Moving on to cool thingies. Again, I'm going to go from left to right. Mr. Alex G. Fox. Cool thingy.
Thank you, Mr. British Man. I tell you what, I've got a really cool thingy, right? And it was only, and I'm using it right now. And it's not really that cool, but I'm trying to build it up. It's called Cool Recorder. And I am using this right now, and I am recording all the video streams, all the audio streams for this entire Skype conversation. And it cost me $19.99. And I actually, after I'd already bought it, I found a 20% voucher on the internet. And I thought, beep, that's what I thought. But I played with it yesterday. I am so impressed because it also comes with all these conversions and you can record in different ways. So what I was doing yesterday practicing, I was talking to somebody, I recorded the video streams. And it doesn't record the way we're looking at it. It records them as separate streams. And you can then there's a little bit of software that comes with it that will split them into separate streams. And so you can stick it into whatever it is, Final Cut or anything. And I could play with this if I was bothered, and I could make it look just like the normal Mac show by putting all their little screens in little things with thirds and all this business. And I'd never even heard of it. I just put in a search thinking there's no way I'm going to find anything that does what I want it to do. And it does what I want it to do. And it does it really, really well. So it's called Cool Recorder. It's by a company, which I don't want to click. There, well, you've done. It's called by Ecamm. And I'm really, really impressed. And it's made for Mac. And I love it.
Lovely. Lovely, jubbly. Ladies and gentlemen, the next cool thingy is Mr. Dr. Habermack.
Ta-da! Okay, right. Quick questions and answers before we get on to what my cool thing is. How, everybody, what size, what's your iTunes music library size like? Don?
iTunes music library size is about, let's have a look, just my music or just the movies as well?
Just the music.
Just the music is about, hang on, I'll tell you exactly.
Oh. Anyone else jump in? Whilst we
I can't remember. 600 gigabytes of movies.
600? Okay.
And quite a lot of music as well. Probably about 100 gig of music.
100 gig of music. Alex?
I'm just looking. I reckon it's got to be more than... No idea, because it's taking too long. I've got a feeling it was about 80 gigabyte of 80 gigs. Audio.
Wilbert?
I'm going to go for... 88 gig of TV shows, 60 gig of movies, and 60 gigs of 120, but about 200, 250 gig.
Okay, so I mean, pretty much the smallest coming out there is 30 gigs of music, which is, let's face it, a shed load of albums. And it's quite easy just to listen to the same few albums again and again because they're the ones you like and you like them and things. But you're buried in everyone's like. Massive libraries, stuff that they forgot they had. It was really cool and things. Anyway, this is free. It's really cool. And it's a cool thing about Lion, which is getting otherwise buried. In the system preferences, this is the Lion iTunes screensaver. So if anyone knows that, if you go to system preferences, screensaver, you can select an iTunes library as a screensaver. And it populates your screen with little tiles of the album cover art from your entire iTunes library, which is brilliant because, I mean, who doesn't love album art because there's some fantastic album covers. What's brilliant in Lion is that if an album cover marches across the screen and you go, oh, the Grateful Dead, haven't listened to that for ages, you mouse over it and a little play icon pops up. You hit play and it starts playing the album.
And that's your cool thingy.
That's my cool thingy.
You come here with an inbuilt screensaver that everybody knows about and everybody uses.
Yeah.
And
I didn't know you could play it from the screensaver.
You bloody did, Don.
I did not. That's the first I've heard of it. I was impressed.
But there's going to be a screencast about it next week, though.
It's a short screencast.
That is the worst cool thingy I have ever heard.
I'll talk about trying to deflect flack.
Says the man who didn't know about home sharing on Apple TVs.
Which 20-year-old bit of software are you pushing this? least my pick is only a few weeks old.
Yeah, go on. Is it? Is it? I thought you could. I have seen it. I thought I sort of assume it's always been there, but it's not.
No, it's not been there. It's just new in Line. It's officially now the best thing about Line.
What are you going to do next week? What's going to say you
next week? Smart holders.
No, we've had that. I think that was one of Will's.
Smartphone? No. Right, okay, moving on from that terrible, terrible pick in the nicest possible way. Mr. Chris Forsman, what have you got?
I'm actually going to mention this. I have this really inexpensive silicone keyboard cover made by Newer Technology. It's called the New Guard.
This is getting worse.
Keyboard.
This is getting worse.
I'm mentioning it because I get comments on it nonstop. Anytime I'm out in public with my MacBook Air, I've got one of these one of the keyboard covers, and it makes all the keys look red, and everybody's just fascinated. They're like, they think I've gone to some incredible great lengths to have this custom red keyboard, and they want to know how and why I did it. And it's just a $12 simple silicone keyboard cover, and I got it because I'm just a terrible mess, and I don't want to ruin my computer. And it's really inexpensive. Like I said, it's like $12-$13. And but they come in white, black, red, and pink. And so people who like to tweak, you know, their computer, make it all custom, it's really inexpensive and it's actually useful. So I'm just gonna keep plugging it because people ask me about it all the time.
It's useful because it stops the sort of crap going into your
I think it's the Mac equivalent of having your mittens tied on a bit of string through your coat so you can't lose them.
Yeah, but it looks way cooler. Nobody asks you, where did you get that string to tie your mittens on your coat? No,
you don't go around with a bicycle helmet wherever you go, do you?
Only when I ride my bike.
Thing is, though, if to be fair, I've got a MacBook Pro, when I close the lid and I lift it up again, you can see the little outlines on your screen of the keys, can't you? So you wonder whether it's like doing super small scratches that'll build up with time.
Usually it's just oil from your fingers on the keys transferring to the screen.
Sounds very suspicious, this stuff.
Because I'm always wearing my mittens when I type, so I don't make it.
Yeah, see?
Lovely. And last but not least... Don, what have you got?
A cool thing. Well, this is something that I discovered today, actually. In fact, I think it only was released today. I know we've bagged on Chrome and Google, but this is actually a Chrome application that you run in the Chrome browser. And it's actually, there was a documentary on last week by CBS News called 60 Minutes, which was an interview with the chap who actually wrote the biography of Steve Jobs. And what they've done is they developed this this Chrome app for 60 Minutes that actually runs the documentary in the Chrome browser. But they've done it really nicely. It's like a full screen app, and it's really nicely done. There's some nice little widgets and things in there. But if you want to see that documentary and you want to see it on your Mac, download a copy of Chrome, go into the Chrome App Store and download the 60 Minutes application. And I was very impressed. It's good.
How long did it take to watch?
About 60 minutes, I think.
Funny that. I was going to ask you a question, Don. Now, if I was going to look for, like, a little app to maybe learn about possibly screencasts online, where do you think would be a good place to go and look at one of those?
Well, you could always have a look in the App Store, I suppose, and do a search for screencasts, especially if you want to learn about Lion. But you know what? I didn't include that screensaver tip in my Lion tutorial. I'll have to read
it. Get a revised version out.
I'll have
right
to redo
now.
It. I have to get it translated into four different languages, though. That's the only problem.
Is it wrong of me to be so pleased with little things like that?
No, not. So that's one of the pleasures of using the Mac, isn't it? You find these little nuggets of functionality built in there. That's
really cool. I mean, I love my iTunes Visualizer screensaver because I like looking at album art, and it's, you know, suddenly I moused over it and play. I was like, and I was really chuffed, and now Will spoilt it all for me, and now it's gone sour, and I feel I feel bad about it, and I can't use it anymore.
It's a bit of a bully, isn't he?
He is. I don't
know. Yeah.
Bully? Yeah.
What do you think of it so far, Will?
Not a lot. Is that about my cool thingy? Is. Mm-hmm. Is. What's it called? I can't recall that. It's on my iPhone.
That's not
home sharing for iTunes?
Sims Medieval is what it is. 59p,
blooming ace. I've always loved the Sims games. Not like SimCity, you know, the little sort of walk about and you can tell them what to do and that sort of thing. Sims Medieval, very good. Considering this is the Halloween thingy, podcast, we should have a Halloween-based pick, but we haven't got one, have we, really?
No, because we're all adults. I'll find a five-year-old to give me some advice on the subject.
Right, okay, so there's the cool thing. Yes, a word from the sponsor, which is UK2.net. Now, personally, I haven't used them much, and so I think it would be rather shallow of me to big them up without, from a personal point of view. But I trust our the word of our regular host, Mr. Ewan Rankin, and he absolutely loves them, and they do, let's be honest, a great job of providing or what's the word I'm looking for when servicing this podcast. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
well, I can big them up, Will, because I actually run my server on the UK2.net network, wow. And it's pretty damn good. They do a smashing job. Very fast and very responsive as well, so I've been very, very pleased with them.
And they're based in the UK as well, aren't they?
They are, yep, they are indeed.
Canary Wharf.
Canary Wharf, are they?
Down in that London. Eldon, that's where I live.
Down in the
south. Round the corner from me. Yeah, I mean, I vouch for them. I mean, I've used them for a couple of years now. I used them before I even came to the network, and they've never let me down. And my incompetence has always been taken in their stride, and they've always fixed everything that I've broken because I've tinkered with it, and they've always done it with a smile, and they've always done it instantly. So I will vouch for them.
And isn't
when you email their technical support, they get back to you really promptly.
Oh, that's
excellent. Right, we do have two voucher codes. I mean, I know this is like look and learn and share. We have, when you buy anything from them, you can go to the checkout and you can put in Bagel Tech, and that will give you 15% off. And we also have another code, which is Bagel DNS, and that will help them to waive the DNS charge, which they normally give if you transfer a domain in. So we have Bagel Tech, or one word, for 15% off, and Bagel DNS to get the DNS charge waived. So both of them are worth writing down and keeping in your pocket.
Brilliant. I've got to be honest, I'm looking for a new ISP to move British Mac to. And based on all the great reviews and the wonderful stuff that they've done for you and the Bagel Tech Network, I'll be moving to them as well.
Yeah, I can vouch for them. Irrelevant of the network, I can vouch for them.
It'll be very cosy, won't it? It's all there. Okay then, so to wrap up, where's Dr. Happy Mac gone?
I think he's hanging some curtains.
Is he? Right. Let's again go
multitasking.
Alex, where can we find you? People want to know more.
Get me Alex G Fox on Twitter, and when my life is organised, I shall give you some really interesting stuff. But until then, I'm going to carry on being boring.
Brilliant. I like the boring. Mr. Chris Forsman, where can we get hold of you?
Well, I contribute regularly to Ars Technica, so you can read all my fascinating articles on arstechnica.com. And I am also on Twitter at Forsmack, so you can bug me there. And if you're not a jerk, I might bug you back.
That's why you never reply.
Well, now you know.
Penultimately, Mr. Dr. Happy Mac, where can we get you from? Or where can we touch you?
Oh, you can get me in my new shed.
Yes.
Shedzilla. Fantastic. Yes. At Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter. Do drop us a line and give us a follow.
Yes. And finally, but certainly not least, Mr. Don McAllister, where can we get hold of you?
Right, you can find me over at screencastonline.com for my weekly video tutorial. You can find out the details of my new app over at screencastonline.com/MAS.
Tell us about it, Don.
Oh, no, I won't bore you with it. I did that last
week.
Oh,
go on, 30 seconds about it.
You winding me up? What?
No, seriously, I'm
It's 2 hours, 17 minutes of video tutorials all about Lion, about 60 chapters in there. So I take you through everything that's new within Lion and explain all the details. There's subtitles in there, so it's multilingual. So if you If you want to see it in simplified Chinese or Brazilian Portuguese or Spanish, you can switch on these subtitles and fully contained application. It's currently on reduced price at the Mac App Store. I think it's £2.49. That's like an introductory price for the next couple of weeks. And you can find it by going to either to the App Store and searching for SCO Tutor, or as I say, go to screencastonline.com/MAS and see a little promo video about it there as well.
So, over 2 hours of expert Mac tuition for just over £2.
£2.49, yeah.
Are you mad?
Well, I know. Well, I didn't know how much to price it for, to be honest. So it's
£20.
It's an experiment.
And also remembering, if you want to learn simplified Chinese, you can always buy it and then learn off the subtitles.
That's right.
That's a very good point. Personally, I and this is absolutely genuine. I really look forward to the Don screencast. They're brilliant. Really, I don't know. Maybe I'm a geek, but I really look forward to them. So for that sort of money, that's worth every single penny.
Oh, you're a good man. And Will?
Yes?
Not a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Bagel Tech Mac. My name is Will Green. You can get me if you want to at www.britishmac.com. And next week, you only be back tanned and beautiful and lovely. Thanks for listening. So I've set up Audio Hijack Pro to record it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if anybody else has got anything, I'm not saying that I've got any doubt in my technical prowess.
Yeah. You want somebody else to record the stream as well?
If you wouldn't mind, is that all right?
Yeah, that's all right. I'm doing it anyway, so yeah. I've got that call recorder thing works pretty well, so.
This is really good, isn't it? That really works. Right, Alex Fox.
We don't need Ewan and all his fancy schmancy mixer desk and all that gubbins.
Well, that's it. He gets obsessed by the technology, doesn't he? Obsessed.
Yeah. Obsessed. Bit of Skype.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to shut some doors, can't I?
Sweet.
I'm going to do the Mac show, by the looks of it. It's not very complicated. I'll explain later. Hey? Today? Yeah, I mean, Ewan's away, so we're doing it now.
Doing it professionally for once.
I just wait to say, with a shower, you know.
I don't even bother to turn up for you in shows.
Apple tribute video. We'll talk about Fatty Schiller and the used car salesman, shall we?
He wasn't on it.
Wasn't he?
No.
Good job. Right. I haven't got the music. I suppose... I assume Ewan's going to edit this, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's rather a big assumption, but...
Yeah, we could... Can we sing the song, Matt?
How does the song go?
No idea. I never hear it.
Yes, okay.
Right. It's a bit like... Isn't it a bit like the intro to Mac Break Weekly, but slightly different?
Right. Are you ready, then?
Are we recording now?
I'm recording. I'm recording, well, mate. So you're in trouble now.
Oh. Right, let's begin it. 3, 2, 1. I need some curtain stuff for my camper. Listen, I'm gonna crack on because
let's go.
We could spend our whole life doing this, couldn't we?
We could.
Right. 3, 2, 1.